afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bill Morissette, representative from District 42, and I'm here to urge you to seriously consider and send out with a due pass recommendation House Bill 2829. This is an attempt to correct the problem encountered by two constituents during this past year who separately took over existing businesses with the Oregon Lottery. Both constituents had previously had lottery licenses, so they were reapplying. The circumstances differ in the two cases, but in both cases, delays in completing the lottery paperwork and background checks meant that they couldn't receive the lottery contracts in time to take over the businesses. And it did result in a loss of revenue for both the state and for the businesses. Now, as you will hear from the representative from the lottery, part of the problem was their not filling out the applications correctly the first time, and so there were some delays which caused some problems, but I think that there were problems on both sides. So I asked the Legislative Council to draft a bill that would allow the lottery to grant temporary authority to new owners of businesses, and this would let them continue lottery operations pending completion of the lengthy paperwork and background checks. Meanwhile, after the experiences of the two business owners, the lottery changed its own operating rules to allow the issuance of temporary contracts, and you'll hear from the lottery spokesman Dave Hooper in just a moment. But the reason that I'm continuing with this is that I don't want implicit authority to grant temporary licenses in the statutes. I would like explicit authority. For instance, the Lottery Commission could decide that they don't want to grant temporary licenses at some future time, and no one would know that they even have that ability. And in the worst case scenario, they could say that, well, the statute does not explicitly allow us to grant temporary licenses. So I congratulate the Lottery Commission for changing its rules, and my request is permissive in nature, and I would just like to have it in the statute so it would allow people to see that it can be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Questions for Representative Morissette?
If you don't mind, I'd like to stay at the table while Mr.
Sure.
Hooper comes.
That'd be fine. Representative Johnson?
Thank you. Representative Morissette, in the case of your two constituents, have their licenses gone ahead and proceeded to
satisfactory conclusions, but with delays of up to 40 days in about in each case. It did take a while for the paperwork to be completed. In the one case, the day that the man took over the business was the day that they came and carried all of the equipment out of the store and said it would be back in up to 60 days. And it did turn out okay. But there was some, you know, I got the records from the Lottery Commission concerning his application, and I received a letter from him with his explanation, and they don't jive. So, you know, he was at fault for not getting all of the information in on time. However, they don't start processing the paperwork until everything is in or until the business opens. And so there was an unfortunate mix-up.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
As I understand how I've read your bill, that if there was a reason during that 90-day period that the Lottery Commission found that the subsequent owner of a business was unacceptable to them based on some objective criteria, that they could come and summarily terminate the relationship in that 90-day period?
Yes.
Good. I just want to make sure I'd read it correctly.
Absolutely.
Other questions? Representative, just so I understand, I want to make sure I understand how Section 2, Paragraph 2, and Paragraph 3 fit together. Paragraph 2 says the Commission summarily, without prior administrative proceeding, may revoke a temporary letter of credit. Then Paragraph 3 of Section 2 says a person shall be given an interview under the direction of the Commission if they so request prior to revocation.
Yeah.
do you, are you confident and comfortable those two fit together and are consistent
with
one another?
Well, I think the Lottery Commission will testify that they don't do this for when they revoke a license. They don't give that type of interview. And my response is they should at least do the courtesy of calling the person and telling them they're going to revoke it. I'm not going to push the idea that there has to be some follow-up procedure. I am satisfied with their interpretation that it isn't absolutely necessary to notify. I think that they should, as a matter of courtesy, at least notify.
Oh, I like paragraph 3, frankly, because I think the opportunity to have an interview and a discussion before the action is taken makes sense.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I think that would be a good idea. Their objection is that they don't do it to people with a existing license. So why should they do it with a temporary license? I think I agree. It would be good if they would do it with everybody.
But are you comfortable, Representative, that paragraphs 2 and 3 are consistent with one another?
Yes. I am comfortable, yes.
Okay. Any other questions for Representative Morissette? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the interview piece was deleted from the bill so that two classes of license holders were not treated differently, would that be a fatal flaw?
No. I don't believe that would be a fatal flaw.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hooper, would you like to come forward, please? Well, my right side's holding us down well here. The left side is
I might as well leave.
Representative Montes Anderson's all by herself out there.
She's got the leverage. She's way out there.
Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Hooper.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Hooper. I'm the public affairs manager with the Oregon State Lottery. I want to start off right up front. Representative Morissette and the lottery are not at odds at this. This is not an adversarial hearing. I discussed the bill with Representative Morissette to understand the genesis for it. I believe our current application processes address the concerns. We have a temporary contract, which is allowed in statute and has been implemented in our administrative rules.
Thank you.
In the past, we had what was known as the sale of business rule, which predated the temporary contract now in effect. Under both the old sale of business rule and the current temporary contract process, a retail applicant can apply for and receive a lottery contract prior to taking possession of the business and be up and selling within 24 hours. Lottery equipment would remain in place and would only be disabled for 24 hours to close the books on the previous owner and reactivate a fresh account for the new owners. We understand everybody's desire to be up and running. Minimizing downtime means additional revenue for them and obviously additional revenue for the state. Those are the very reasons why we adopted the sale of business rule in 97 and the current temporary contract in 2000. We don't object to the provisions of this bill. It is permissive. It does not require us to do a temporary letter of authority, and it very much mirrors the processes we have in place. I just want to point out some technical considerations for the committee. a letter of authority could conflict with other statutes that require a contract be in place before lottery products may be sold. For example, by statutory definition, a lottery game retailer means a person with whom the Lottery Commission has contracted for the purpose of selling tickets or shares. Another section of our chapter, a video lottery game terminal shall be placed for operation only on the premises that has a contract with the Oregon State Lottery. The bill's provisions that a lottery shall grant an interview to a person prior to revocation of a letter of authority is a review concept that is outside the Administrative Procedures Act. That is the standard act that all agencies use for addressing matters of recourse. And I would like to say for the record that the Oregon Lottery does not summarily yank its contracts from retailers. We have extensive discussions. We send them letters. You may be out of compliance with this. Please send us information that will explain how you are in compliance, or if you are not in compliance, how you intend to rectify it. These letters go back and forth considerably. The only time we would summarily yank a contract, and I can give you two examples. One, gaming enforcement found an illegal gray machine in one of our retailers. That's a violation of state law. they lost their lottery contract summarily. State law also requires the video lottery retailers have an OLCC on-premise license. If they lose their OLCC premise license, they lose their video lottery contract summarily. That is a matter of state law. We do not, however, take away their traditional game contract. So I just want to state for the record that we have very good working relationships with our retailers, and we have considerable conversations with somebody. And under the Administrative Procedures Act, if we terminate their contract, they have 60 days to ask for reconsideration, and we carry that forth under the APA. Lastly, the Oregon Lottery would move very cautiously before implementing a blanket letter of authority. The Constitution requires the Rules of Lottery and Act shall ensure the integrity, security, honesty, and fairness of the lottery. We have an obligation to do preliminary background checks on any person or business wishing to be associated with the lottery. This is to ensure no criminal elements are involved in any aspects of the lottery's operation, and that the retailers who sell lottery products and collect funds on behalf of the state will be responsible managers. Again, we support the intent of this bill. We feel we're already there. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have about our process.
Questions for Mr. Hussle?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Thank you. So basically, I think what I'm hearing you say is this bill isn't necessary. Is that what you're saying, because it's already covered, or you already deal with it in a fair manner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I'm not saying it's not necessary, and that's in due respect to the representative. I believe the concerns he's raised are legitimate. What I would like to tell you is that if people use the process as we have, they're able to take over a business and be up and running. People have, I think, some obligation, if they want to become a lottery retailer, to find out what the process is. If these people show up a couple of weeks before they want to take over a business, that really doesn't give us adequate time to do the due diligence we're required. And again, these people got their contract within 4 to 6 weeks, and that's pretty standard time for the processing we have to do, including the background investigation.
Other questions? Mr. Hooper, is there, I mean, I don't think it's explicit in your testimony, but potentially implicit, there's a concern that a temporary letter of authority may conflict with constitutional requirements of the commission relative to the way in which the lottery is, the oversight of the lottery required of the commission. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't believe that it conflicts with our constitutional obligations. I just am trying to state that those same obligations would apply to a letter of authority. I do not want people, by virtue of this statute, to believe they can just willy-nilly walk up to the lottery and walk out with a letter of authority. We are going to do due diligence, and it's not going to be a remedy for quickly getting into the lottery business. Again, if people work with us and we have staff dedicated to working with applicants, they can get up and running and be there within 24 hours of when they take over the business.
Okay, and another question. I asked Representative Morissette if he was comfortable that paragraphs 2 and 3 of Section 2 are consistent. He seemed to believe they were. Are you comfortable that they're consistent as well in terms of the direction that it gives the Lottery Commission?
Well, certainly Section 2 of the bill, we can do that. We actually have we can summarily terminate a contract for grounds. We can terminate a contract, anybody can terminate a contract with 14 days notice. So the retailer can do the same with us. They want to terminate their contract with the lottery, they give us 14 days notice. And again, I think Section 3, I understand the intent of that. I hope I've addressed that. But as a state agency, we're bound by the APA, and that's really the process for recourse that all state agencies use and individuals working with the agencies follow.
Section 3 doesn't interfere with the APA, does it?
No, sir, it doesn't. But again, under APA, we are not required to give a person who's received the contract an interview prior. As I've tried to state, we work very closely with folks. If we believe they're out of compliance or have an issue, we contact them personally. Our field reps are in this establishment at least every other week. So, I mean, we have face-to-face interactions with these folks all the time.
Okay. Any other questions?
May I?
Yes. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We use the word letter of authority because we were told by legislative counsel that was the proper word to use, the term to use, temporary letter of authority, but we're happy to go with temporary contract if it's a matter of semantics. I mean, I think I applaud the commission for making the rule change, and I think that it does do what this bill intends to do. I would like to make it explicit, though, not implicit, because he said in the, he says, which is allowed by, in statute, to do this, a temporary contract, but it doesn't say that in statute. I would like it stated in statute that a temporary contract under certain circumstances is allowed.
Yeah.
And now part of the problem is my constituent, the one in the liquor store, was apparently in contact with the field agent who was telling him something apparently that he thought was different than what he was receiving from the office. And I admit that he didn't do all of his paperwork on time. They sent things back to him to redo. But they told him they weren't going to even start the process until the business changed hands. And at that time, they said, we are going to take your equipment out of here, and then we will process your paperwork. And he understood that after he got his paperwork in, they weren't going to start the process until the day the business was changed hands. So, and I'm not blaming the commission. I think there was a misunderstanding, but I would like it explicit in the statute that there is a possibility, if certain things happen beforehand, that a letter temporary permit would be issued. Now, if you can't get a temporary permit by not submitting paperwork, I think they have to be somewhere down the line before that decision would be made. So if they're almost there, they would say, okay, we're going to allow you to stay in, we'll shut you down for 24 hours, make sure that all of the identification, the names and everything has changed, and then you can start up and finish the process, and that's the end of that. And that's all that I'm asking is.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Isn't that just what Mr. Hooper said could happen, though? I'm still trying to be convinced that there's a problem that needs to be solved here. Maybe Mr. Hooper could.
Yes, thank you. Representative Johnson, your question, is there statutory authority to issue temporary contracts? Is that the question I understand?
The scenario that Representative Morissette described seems to be consistent with what you said already exists in fact. It's just you're looking for the statutory assurance that the lottery won't change their rules. And I guess I'm a little bit uncomfortable in trying to pass legislation anticipating changes in rules. So I'm still struggling to see that there's a problem.
Yes, thank you, Chair Witt, Representative Johnson. Again, back in the case of the one constituent who bought the liquor store at the time, we had the sale of business rule. And he could have come in and applied enough in advance to do the paperwork and just received that contract the day he took possession, shut the machines off for 24 hours. Because he did not come in time to complete the sale of business process, which generally takes 3 to 4 weeks, he had to go with the change of ownership process, which does begin, as the representative cited, once they have taken possession. That's about a 4 to 6 week process. We do remove the machines. In this case, it's the terminal that sells the megabucks tickets from the premises, because people walk in, they see the machine, they expect to be able to buy. They get frustrated and confused when, well, here's the machine, but you really mean you can't sell. So for that reason, we do remove terminals and then put them back in. I think the representative and the lottery are very much on the same page here. And
you know,
tried to be responsive to the legislature in the past by adopting these very policies.
If I can say this, I mean, there's certain rules that the lottery has now, but those rules can change. And I think that what this bill does by putting it in statute, even though it says may,
right,
even though it says may, it gives a certain a clear legislative direction, I think, to the commission in terms of, you know, what we're expecting from them in terms of how they would treat a new applicant in this situation. So, I mean, I don't see this as strictly redundant at all. I see putting something in statute which gives a legislative direction. It's not a compulsion, but it's direction. in terms of trying to deal with new applicants. Representative, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of the reason for doing this is during the interim, I served on an agency oversight committee, and we spent 3 meetings dealing with the OLCC board who were changing their rules quite often and reversing themselves. And so as a result of that, I was asked by Chair Loken to follow up with a study group, which we are doing now, Senator Ferrioli and I, and we are going to review some of the statutes for OLCC to try to give some better direction to the OLCC in terms of what some legislative expectations are, not to completely tie their hands, but to give some consistency so the rule changes won't flip back and forth. So that reinforced my feeling about this, is not to tie their hands, simply to give some legislative intent that a temporary license is a good idea when they meet the qualifications. It is much easier than the business, what was the terminology that you had before, the
sale
of business. That's a complicated matter. I believe the temporary license is simple. So, thank you.
What,
so much.
Representative Johnson.
Follow on. This is to Mr. Hooper. Will this bill, however, not create two classes of licensees? Those that are afforded the courtesy interview as a result of their temporary status, and those that are not afforded the temporary interview, not afforded the interview by virtue of their permanent status?
Chair Witt, Representative Johnson, I believe that is a matter for the committee to consider. Again, we, all state agencies, work under the Administrative Procedures Act. I would suggest that any rules, policies, practices we adopt do not conflict with the Administrative Procedures Act. So I would just strongly recommend that any recourse be done in concert with the APA.
Speaking to that point for a moment, I think it was your testimony, Mr. Hooper, that there's nothing under the APA that prevents you from doing an interview with someone before you would terminate a contract. And I think Representative Johnson's point's well made. At the same time, I think there's, and maybe Representative Morissette wants to address this more broadly, more maybe he doesn't, but I think there's a certain legislative direction here. And I think part of that legislative direction is we expect the Lottery Commission to deal with retailers in a respectful way, which means that before you would terminate a license or not grant a license to a new applicant in these certain circumstances, there's a discussion. You know, they don't have to, you know, they don't, well, here I guess they do have to do it, it just shall be given if it's requested. And I think that's, frankly, appropriate policy, and I would think that, I would hope that the Lottery Commission would deal with all retailers in that manner.
And we do, and again, I'm just speaking from a legal standpoint, in terms of our day-to-day practices, that's exactly what we do.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you. I got here a little bit late, so if this question's already been asked, I apologize. I'm trying to quickly get up to speed on this. If you were, Representative Morissette, if I read your testimony, since I didn't get a chance to hear it, and you said that you might be willing to let go of subsection 3 if it caused a legal problem, and my question would be that if subsection 3 were deleted, would you perhaps also want to delete on line 11 the items between the commas, summarily and without prior administrative proceedings, and that way the Administrative Procedures Act would then govern the process they use to revoke the temporary contract? Would that make some sense?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson?
A question then to Mr. Hooper. That would then, if that was deleted the way that Representative Carlson just explained it, that would then strip away from the Lottery Commission the ability to quickly terminate a license in this interim period of someone who was deemed undesirable to be a licensee.
That would always be a concern. And again, if we have egregious activities, criminal gambling, fraud against a player, actions such as those by a retailer, I think that the lottery needs to be able to address quickly to ensure the integrity and security.
I guess the thing that I'm not concerned about that part of it. That could be dropped as far as I'm concerned. What I am interested in is the temporary license explicitly being mentioned in the statute. Now, I would hope that there would be the notification. We didn't learn of this conflict until we had the discussion, and if we had been aware of this, we perhaps would have drafted it differently, but that our main intent is to have the temporary permit in the statute.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Representative Carlson?
My concern, and maybe I don't know enough about the Administrative Procedures Act, but my understanding is it provides a format for due process. Does it preclude you from, if someone's doing illegal activity, revoking a contract, because then someone has a right to appeal, right? And then you go through the administrative hearings process, it still doesn't stop you from, if you're talking about that illegal activity, stopping it quickly and then going through an appeals process. So sure. I don't understand what the issue is that we were talking about just a few moments ago and how that would cause you any problem if you simply followed the Administrative Procedures Act.
And again, that's why my reference is constantly back to the APA and not wanting in statute to create a process which is outside of it. And again, the legislative intent is clear about treating people with respect and due process, and we endeavor to do that on a daily basis.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Crummell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hooper, I thought I heard you say something about video game terminals and OLCC licenses. So do you follow a similar type of process that the OLCC follows to determine whether or not a person is a person or a business would be capable of handling a lottery license?
Often those applications are submitted at the same time by a person interested in getting into that business. They do have to apply to OLCC for their licenses, and they have certain disclosures and personal background they have to go through. And at the same time, they'll be applying for a lottery contract. We do try to dovetail those processes as best we can to minimize reductions. In fact, we have a bill in the Senate right now that will help better the two agencies' application processes better coincide with one another. So, yes, we do work. Retailers are often applying to both agencies at the same time.
So, if I may follow up, Mr. Chair. So, if the person qualifies for an OLCC license, they most likely will qualify for a lottery license?
Not necessarily, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, Representative Crummell. We do have some different standards in statute, some additional restrictions regarding past criminal activity, financial responsibility, and so forth. So. Not having been with OLCC, I can't speak authoritatively as to their entire application process or all of their standards for granting or denying a contract. I know that ours do have certain requirements that need to be met, and certainly we do look at past criminal activity as a factor in consideration of granting a license.
So, follow-up. So if... if a person, now let me clarify something. If a person doesn't have an OLCC license, they can't get a video terminal.
That's by statute, sir. Yes.
Okay.
461.217 is the statute okay. In question. I'd be glad to read that.
Well, in your testimony here, it says has a contract with the Oregon State Lottery. You've got. Go ahead.
Thank you. 461.217 sub 2, a video lottery game terminal shall be placed only on the premises of an establishment licensed by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission with a full or limited on-premise sales license. That's been in effect. Well, the OLC license structure was amended last session, but the requirement for an on-premise license has been in effect since 1991 when the legislature first passed the video lottery law.
Okay.
And that's primarily for age control purposes?
For
age control purposes. You have to be 21 years or older to be in that portion of a premise. So age control is the overriding factor for having that OLCC license requirement tied to a video lottery contract.
Okay. So if a person has a juice bar,
they would not be eligible for video lottery games.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to, Arizona Moore said anything else? I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on the on House Bill 2829. Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2829 to the floor with the due process recommendation.
Representative Devlin moves House Bill 2829 to the floor as written with a due pass recommendation. So discussion.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to understand. I've, in the testimony I read, the lottery has a problem with the word letter of authority. Is that correct? And would prefer the word contract.
No, I don't. I didn't hear them say that, Representative. What I heard them say is that they believe they are essentially doing through rule what this bill provides for, but Representative Morissette made the distinction that he would like to see this put in statute, which gives it a certain permanence until the next legislature meets, presumably. But you know, it sets up a certain standard relative to dealing with people who may want a temporary letter of authority. Now, I understand the word temporary letter of authority. Mr. Clem tells me that that was legislative council's preferred language in terms of this. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. In checking with legislative council, they were concerned that if we put temporary contract, that we would be looking at a whole different part of law that really has a really doesn't fit the situation of just a temporary letter of authority. They thought would preclude us getting into contractual law and all of the other timing requirements that go with contractual law. They felt that letter of authority best met the intent of a temporary agreement as opposed to a contract subject to contractual law.
Well, I think what it's, you know, it gives the Lottery Commission another approach here, not one that they're required to use or compelled to use. It says may grant a temporary. So they will have a new opportunity to under the statute to give a temporary letter of authority where they think it makes sense not to exceed 90 days, where they can review the process of certification. So I don't see it inconsistent with the temporary contract issue. It's just another vehicle they have to address this particular issue as it comes up. Representative Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think we could anticipate that if the Lottery Commission does question the Legislative Council's interpretation, they have their own counsel, and they'll probably bring that issue, should this bill be ever considered in the Senate, if there's a legitimate issue here that needs to be addressed. In terms of terminology, it does not impact really the intent of the bill.
Representative Bates.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the last campaign cycle, we heard a great deal about the difference between legislative intent and administrative rule. And that was, in my area at least, it was a bone of very deep contention. People felt that administrative rules can sometimes change, that the intent of the law was lost, that there should be something done legislatively to deal with it. I think what this bill does is it makes clear legislative intent, and for that reason I support it. Admittedly, the change needed to occur has already occurred in administrative law, but that can change back again. And this makes it perfectly clear, I think, what the intent is and gives them another avenue of dealing with these situations. So I think it's a pretty straightforward bill, and I would move it forward. It looks good to me.
Representative Carlson, do you want to add something?
No, I just had one more question, and that is in Sections 2 and 3, by saying the summarily and without prior administrative proceedings, does that preclude the Administrative Procedures Act from applying to that circumstance? Because I personally would not want to see someone's license revoked without recourse except for an interview.
Well, this would be simply to revoke a temporary letter of authority, right?
Okay.
So it's not their license.
Okay.
This is summarily without prior administrative proceeding may revoke a temporary letter of authority. And I think what this bill is saying is this temporary letter of authority is viewed as just a bridge situation, and there's a realization that you still have to comply with all of the requirements to become a lottery retailer. And if the commission reaches the point where they find something like a criminal background or something in the applicant's past that would create some immediate concern, it gives them the opportunity to summarily revoke that temporary letter of authority. I think we should, I think it's appropriate to grant that authority to them. And I think the subsection 3 shall be given an interview if they request it. I don't see that necessarily as inconsistent with paragraph 2. I mean, if you become aware of the fact there may be a problem here and you may end up losing your temporary letter of authority, if you request an interview, then I think it's appropriate you be given an interview.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a problem with the interview. I have a concern, I guess, about whether due process would be allowed the person when it's revoked. And maybe because I came in late, I'm missing the timelines that happened here in terms of...
Yeah, I think in defense of the bill, I think it's we're talking about summarily revoking a temporary letter of authority, not a contract.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's a little bit... This is, I think, a significantly different situation than revoking a contract.
Mm-hmm.
So on that basis, I'm comfortable with that. Other discussion? Okay, if not, Dan, why don't you go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Garrard, excused. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Canop, excused.
Excuse.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill 2829 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Morissette, would you like to carry the bill? Representative Morissette will be the carrier. Thank you. Okay, we will close our work session on House Bill 2829, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 278. Okay, Dan?
Senate Bill 278 grants authority to the Lottery Commission to specify by administrative rule the number and value of prizes for lottery games that use video devices or tickets or shares in lieu of publishing information on or with each separate game operated by the Lottery Commission. Allows the alternative requirement for the Lottery Commission to provide game number and prize information to the contracted business operating the lottery games. Permits the Lottery Commission to specify by administrative rule the retail sales price of a scratch-off ticket or to print the retail sales price right on the ticket. Senate Committee on Revenue discussed the extent to which changes will impact players, the availability of information on odds of winning various prizes to players, administrative efficiency, and dedication of lottery revenue to gambling addiction. Senate amendment added video poker to the listed lottery games in this bill. The Senate floor vote was 20 ayes, 8 nays, 0 excuse, 2 on legislative business. The Lottery Commission brought this bill forward to preclude future misinterpretation of ORS 461.220 and .240. These statutes require the Lottery Commission to adopt rules that specify the number and value of prizes for winning tickets or shares in each lottery game. The number of varying games by type and the administrative burden required to specify game criteria for each game would cause a tremendous administrative workload.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hooper.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm David Hooper, Public Affairs Manager with the Oregon State Lottery. Thank you for considering Senate Bill 278. As Mr. Clam summarized, the bill proposes technical amendments to ORS 461 to cover many aspects of our games in operation. In periodic review of statutes, the lottery was advised by legal counsel that there appears to be some statutory ambiguity between ORS 461210 and 461220 sub 1. As soon as we received that advice, we brought it to your attention through this bill. The latter statute could be interpreted to require the Commission to adopt separate administrative rules for each and every individual scratch-it game, a break-open game, and variation of video lottery draw poker we offered to the public. Given that the lottery issues 36 new scratch-it games, 12 new break-open games each year, and that the lottery has 20 variations of video lottery draw poker, the Commission would have to adopt at least 48 different scratch-it and break-open administrative rules and possibly another 20 administrative rules anytime we made a minor change to draw poker. Frankly, this would create costly, time-consuming bureaucratic nightmare for the lottery, the Attorney General's Office, and Legislative Council. Okay. Of equal importance, such a process would provide no additional benefit to the public. We do have separate administrative rules for both the scratch-it and break-open product categories.
we have two entire divisions of rules for the video lottery games. These rules set forth the terms, conditions, and requirements that apply to all games and tickets or shares in those types of products. Lengthy administrative rules are not where players go to find information about the games. They can find that information on how to play brochures, the cost of the ticket, the number and value of prizes. Much of that information is right there at the point of sale and often right on the ticket. The odds of any scratch-it game are right on the ticket. The price of the scratch-it game is right on the ticket. So the information the public needs is right there before them. I brought this up before the Senate side. This amendment to rule is not an attempt to exempt the Lottery Commission from rulemaking if it were to choose another type of video lottery game, be that video keno, video bingo, or line games. I know that this is an issue before the legislature. We are not seeking to amend 461.210. The Commission shall adopt rules specifying the types of lottery games. So any alteration that would add a new type of video lottery game would require rulemaking. We submit this to you for clarification. We hope you will agree that the individual rulemaking for each and every scratchy game is not necessary. It won't have any impact on the extent or type of information currently available to the public, and it won't remove any rulemaking obligation from the Commission if it were to consider additional types of things. Thank you. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hooper. Do any members of the committee have any questions? All right. There being no Representative Crum.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Crum.
Well, let's see. Fine, you guys, go ahead and laugh. I'm just trying to make sure I understand what the amendments that the Senate put in are really trying to, because they put in subsection 4, is that correct? That's not, it starts on line 23. Am I reading this correctly, or am I?
Madam Chair, Representative Crummell, what they added on the Senate side was the exemption for the video lottery games. After we drafted the bill with legislative counsel, to exclude the scratch it and break open games, it occurred to us that, well, we've got 20 different variations of video lottery games, and we don't have a different rule for each variation of draw poker. So we added the video lottery games to the scratch it and break open games during the Senate hearing and the work session that followed.
Gotcha. Any other questions?
Thank you. No.
All right. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Hooper, is it fair to say that without this, that you would have to follow the legal opinions that given to you, and you would experience significant fiscal impact in terms of going through all these administrative processes on each scratch-it game, each version of the video poker, et cetera?
Madam Chair, Representative Devlin, that was a question asked on the Senate side. One, to the first point, I think the legal interpretation is ambiguous. We were not told that this would necessarily, but it could. And so we are here looking for clarification. If you say, no, you shall, certainly any administrative proceeding involves fiscal impact in terms of staff time, AG review, and I think also could lead to delays in issuance of a game. For example, if we have a very popular scratchy game and it sells out, we would reissue that game. But technically, it would be a new game. It would be given a new game number. We would go through rulemaking, and that's at least a 49-day process. So there are both fiscal and potential revenue impacts, not of a truly significant nature.
Any other questions for Mr. Hooper? Okay, then we'll close the public. The chairman's back.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hooper.
Thank you.
Anybody else to testify on Senate Bill 278?
No.
Okay, you're not going to testify. You'll have your chance. close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 278. Representative Devlin.
Move Senate Bill 278A.
You want to get home in a reasonable hour tonight.
To the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Fridays might be our best days to move bills.
Representative Brown is volunteering.
Okay, Representative Devlin moves Senate Bill 278A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Bates.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Montes Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye. Okay, Senate Bill 278 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a someone would like to carry the bill? Representative Bates. Representative Bates will carry the bill. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 278, and we open the public hearing on Senate Bill 481. Mr. Dent, and I think Mr. Bauer wants to testify as well.
Good afternoon, Chairman Witt, committee members. My name is Jack Dent. I'm Chief of Pipeline Safety with the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Excuse me. During this past several months, Senator Courtney has had some meetings over pipeline safety to see if there was anything that we needed to do to enhance pipeline safety within the state. And during those meetings, we discovered that in the enabling statute under 757.039, that it allows the Public Utility Commission to enter into agreements with the federal government for jurisdiction over pipeline facilities within the state, but it was referring to the Pipeline Safety Act of 1968, which is no longer in existence. So what this does is removes the language from Pipeline Safety Act of 1968 and puts in a generic term so that it will point in the right direction, whatever they call the Pipeline Safety Act in the future. Right now, it's called the, I better get a piece of paper here so I don't mess this up, Accountable Pipeline Safety and Partnership Act of 1996. So we decided maybe we'd do it the simple way.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Devlin.
They didn't have the same writer for that as we had to name our committees, did they?
They may have, and that's why he's working for the federal government.
I'm still trying to find out how to
get that, by the way. I liked it
better
when it was the Commerce Committee. Okay.
And that's simply what it is. It just changes the language so that whatever they name it in the future, we can still have the right to enter into agreements with the federal government.
So what we're doing here is removing language to an act from 1968, which is no longer in effect, and we're applying a generic relating where the commission is authorized to cooperate with, make certifications to, enter into agreements with, under any particular laws that would be applicable.
That is correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I think
on page 2, specifically it's line 3, and what it says is applicable federal law.
Right.
And that's what it's about.
So actually this is really more of a technical cleanup than anything here.
Yes, sir. And right now we just have jurisdiction over natural gas intrastate pipelines, and there was some talk about the PUC possibly taking liquid pipeline jurisdiction, and that's when this was discovered.
I see. Okay. Mr. Bauer, would you like to add anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. Just wanted to appear and tell you that the industry is supportive of this effort. Also, if I could take just a quick second, Mr. Dent indicated that later this year he would like to retire. The natural gas industry has worked very closely with Mr. Dent and his staff, and we enjoy that working relationship. At times you may hear us complain about our regulatory oversight from the Public Utility Commission. Mr. Dent operates the safety section, and it's been excellent, the working relationship, and we probably communicate from a corporate standpoint with Mr. Dent in his office at least once a week, if not three times a week. So it's a very close working relationship, and I know that the other gas companies feel that this way as well.
Well, we appreciate your good work, Mr. Dent, and congratulations on your upcoming retirement.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to amplify this, there was a letter in our packets that was a wonderful compliment to Mr. Danton's staff for their responsiveness, and I just want to acknowledge that the committee also got copies of that. Thank you.
Representative Carlson?
I was just going to say that I thought maybe Mr. Bauer was coming to insert an amendment requiring Mr. Dent to continue. And
you'd find Mr. Dent testifying against that.
Compel his continued work, huh?
Exactly.
Well, I would like to, but the way PERS is working, I hear that our variable may be in the negative numbers, so I might not be retiring as soon as I would like.
That is a problem. Okay, any other questions for either of our witnesses? Okay, if not, we will close the public hearing and open a work session. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, move SB 481 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Devlin moves Senate Bill 481 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Bates.
Excuse.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson? Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye. And Representative Knope should be shown as excused.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Devlin?
Do you think that this bill needs an oral explanation on the floor? Could it be a consent agenda?
That would be a great idea.
Well, consent requires unanimous...
of all present.
Approval of all present, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Bates, would you like to vote on before we close this work session on Senate Bill 481?
Got me off guard.
Come on, cast the vote.
Technical language change.
Yes.
Oh, there's one vote. So there is one vote for it.
Is there an A vote on this?
No.
You're okay.
Make me sweat.
Do we have a motion to put it on the consent calendar, Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we add 481. SB 481 to the consent calendar.
Okay, the motion from Representative Johnson is to add Senate Bill 481 to the consent calendar with the due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, so ordered. And we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill, I'm sorry, the work session on Senate Bill 481. And with that, we are, well, yeah, I think we're done with our business for today. Just a couple brief announcements.
You're kidding.
No, I
haven't. You can stay if you want.
We have all of our meetings on Friday.
Evidently, the audience knew
Briefly, Monday, if you haven't seen the calendar yet, we're going to be hearing a couple bills that deal with systems development charges for K-12 education. We also will be hearing a bill that provides for an incremental property tax capture for new school construction. I think we'll have quite a few people testifying on those bills on Monday, so kind of be prepared to be here until at least 5:30.
Do either of those have a referral to revenue?
I think any of them would.
I would think so.
Does this one do the others?
No, this
the others do,
and this one
do. A couple of them do, Representative. A couple of them don't. But you might want to take a look at the bills and be prepared. There's going to be quite a bit of testimony, to be my guess. Okay, is there anything else for the committee? The other bill that we were going to have work session on today, we're not quite prepared for, so we'll have that up at a later date. Okay, that we are adjourned.
2 days, 2 days and 1 week, but the lights will be on and the staff will still be there when we do it. I don't know if we can handle that.